And welcome to Courage Cocktail Radio Show. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. Glad you could join us. It's great to be back in the studio. We've been building some wonderful shows for you as the fall unfolds. Today is our seasoning opening. Over the next few weeks, we will be talking to financial planners, a mother who started a support group for family members of inmates. We'll span a breadth of topics and bring you the fresh medicine for vexing problems that you've come to demand on the show. A series is also in the pipeline which features the work of women entrepreneurs here in the Triangle region of North Carolina. Not local? No problem. We vetted the materials so that geography is interesting, but it's not the central lesson these women will be teaching us. It's all about resilience, courage, and discovery. And on that note, we have to cue our stage. Joining us in our studio is our guest, Becky Sansbury, an alumna of Courage Cocktail. You will recall her voice. She spoke to us immediately after Sandy Hook Elementary School, when there was a tragedy struck in December 14th of 2012 in Newtown, Connecticut. 20-year-old Adam Lanza fatally shot 20 children and 6 adult staff members. Prior to driving to the school, Lanza shot and killed his own mother at their Newtown home. As first responders arrived at the scene, Lanza committed suicide by shooting himself in the head. The incident was the deadliest mass shooting at a high school or grade school in U.S. history, and the second deadliest mass shooting by a single person in U.S. history after the 2007 Virginia Tech shootings. Like all of you, our own community was speechless. So the day after that event, I grabbed the phone and I begged Becky to come and join our radio show to help us make sense of this crisis. She did, and we are so grateful. Well, we needed help in restoring our sense of safety after this breach of sense of peace that you expect in schools. Well, Becky has been busy since I've last spoken to her. She's distilled 30 years of her work in guiding people, families, and communities through crisis. Her life's work is now in print. And the book is called After the Shock, Getting You Back on the Road to Resilience When Crisis Hits You Head On. You can find it at Amazon. I suggest you rush out there and log on while you're listening to this program. Welcome to the show, Becky.
Thank you, Leanne. As always, it's such a privilege to be on Courage Cocktail.
You know, I'm dying here, holding on to my seat, because, you know, as we kind of re-enter the season and we kick off a new season, there's so much housekeeping to take care of. But today, and in the background, listeners, perhaps you can hear that wonderful train marking the spot of Carrboro, North Carolina. Becky, what have you got for us in store for us today? Tell us a story.
You know, Leanne, there's nothing like an old story to help spruce up a current story. So let me take you and your wonderful tribe of listeners back to the early days of movies. Let's go back to an escapist story.
Ah.
The Perils of Pauline.
I read the book. I'm not so sure I read the movie or saw the movie.
You may recall that dear Pauline skated on the edge of financial disparity and ruin. Oh. And at times the landlord appeared saying, "You must pay the rent, you must pay the rent." And Pauline cried out, "I can't pay the rent, I can't pay the rent." And then she was kidnapped and tied to the railroad tracks. And all the while, we watched and tried to figure out, how is Pauline going to get out of this one?
Yes.
So often, we may not be in quite dramatic circumstances as Pauline, but we wonder, how am I at least going to get through this one?
Sign me up.
Why don't we bring Pauline up to our day and time and take a look at some of the challenges she may encounter now and perhaps some ways she either uses or builds her resilience to get on and get going.
I'm all ears.
Wonderful. Picture with me, if you will, dear Pauline on her way to work. A bit frazzled, but running on time. Running, that is, until her car blows a tire. On the freeway, in rush hour traffic. Fortunately, she makes it over to the side safely, whips out her cell phone, dials the number for AAA, and while it's ringing, recalls, oops, the budget was tight last month and I forgot to renew my AAA membership. But she hopes that out of the goodness of their hearts, they'll still come and she can tally up the bill later. Her second call is to a coworker. Pauline realizes her manager has a zero tolerance for being late to work. Now, this would be, for any of us, a bit of a nerve-wracking experience. For Pauline, it's moving from the idea of being a difficulty to potentially a crisis, because Pauline is a single mom and does not have child support. Imagine how crucial her income is and keeping her manager happy. So let's take a look at some of the ways Pauline, in her broken-down vehicle on the freeway, can tie in to Pauline and her vehicle on the road of life.
You got me in the palm of your hand. I'm dying to know, where do we start first?
Let's start with tires. Pauline just had one tire blow out. Done. On the spot. What I found over these 30 years of work is that human beings have four stabilizing factors that bring us together in a way that transcends our education, our culture, our beliefs or philosophies, our financial situations, even in this day and time, our political beliefs.
Ah.
I call them the four C's of stability, because a speaker and a writer has to put things in an order that we can remember. So let's go with four letters of words, four words that begin with the same letter. These are the four aspects of our foundation as people that help us to maintain the stability on the road of life, just like the four tires do, as when we say the rubber grips the road.
I'm here. I'm dying to know what they are and how they can help me.
They are so complicated. It's going to be a challenge, but let's see what we can do with it.
Okay.
Let's tick them off in order and then go back and see how they fit in with Pauline's situation. The four C's of stability are comfort, control, community, and connection to something bigger than self.
I'm going to repeat them. They're comfort, control, community, connection to something bigger than self.
That's it exactly.
Keep on telling me.
These are the ways, whether we diagnose them in ourselves or we simply live them out, that we self-regulate, that we make sense of things, and that we function as human beings, sometimes better than others. Mm. It's also the way, whether we do it consciously or unconsciously, we take care of each other by being aware of how these play out in another person's life, whether it's a family member, a friend, or a coworker. So let's step back and look at some of the specific elements within each one and see what happens with Pauline. Comfort. I don't know about you, but most people start their day with something that brings their morning some comfort.
Oh, yeah. For me, it's hit the coffee button. Turn on that coffee pot.
There you go. Pauline shares that with you.
Okay.
Being on a budget, she prepares her own coffee. And when she really wants that extra measure of comfort, she swings by the big SB and gets the one that's in that white cup with the famous green logo and has a few little extra ingredients that may add to the calorie count, but they bring an extra measure of comfort.
And luxury.
And luxury.
Yeah.
Actually, she does that every Tuesday, because on Tuesday she takes a slightly different route to work pertaining to her daughter's schedule, and that's her treat to herself. So now we have not only comfort, but we have a tradition that surrounds it. And our traditions bring us comfort. Sometimes they're tied to religious things, cultural things, family things, or just our own little quirks and patterns. When we can maintain those, then we feel comfortable. Maybe it's the comfort of coming home and putting on your favorite pair of slippers. Maybe it's the comfort of playing a little bit of rough and tangle with your puppy dog when you come in after work.
Right.
Lots of things that either by our senses, by our taste, our eyes, our ears, any of the ways that we touch life can bring us comfort. Now, comfort we might compare to the front tire on the passenger side of Pauline's car.
Okay.
Let's slide over to the front tire on the driver's side of the car. If there's anything that a driver wants to do, it's maintain control of his or her car. We're no different in life. One of the things that a crisis does almost immediately is it blasts control to smithereens.
Ugh.
Sometimes for only a few moments, sometimes for an extended period of time, and for some people, all but permanently. When Pauline realized that not only was she about to be late for work, which definitely put her out of control of her workday, then she went to the factor that she thought would put her back in control, that AAA membership and somebody showing up with the truck right away. When that was stripped away, then she had a double whammy within a moment or two. That is the way sometimes we get affected, where we feel like one thing goes wrong, and rather like a slinky, it spirals into another thing and another and another and another. One of the ways that we can find within ourselves or help someone else with a resource for resilience is to take that first step into regaining control over something.
So what happens next?
Well, before we go to Pauline, I'm going to take you back in history for just a moment. I'm going to take you back to my dad. My dad in World War II in London, when the poor folks there in town were having their flats bombed all over the place. But when those air raid sirens would go off, my dad observed those stalwart and sturdy folks grabbing their teapots and racing for the bomb shelter. I may be losing my home, I may be losing my flat, but you're not taking away my 4 o'clock tea time. I will have my teapot.
Got it.
Sometimes when we can regain control over one tiny thing, we begin to develop the inner stamina to take on another and another and another. How did this affect Pauline? Once Pauline talked to her coworker helped her with one of these resilience pieces. She said, Pauline, did you forget that today is the day once a month when we get that every job has a different name, but it's a bit of a free pass. This is the day that they tend to give us a little leeway on our clock-in time. And I will make sure that your phone is covered until you get here. Clock in, I bet you'll be here within that 30-minute window of time that we get once a month. Suddenly, Pauline had regained control over the clock in time and her coworker had given her a brilliant gift of making sure that Pauline's phone would not be unattended. When we find ways within ourselves or within others to regain a bit of control over our time, our to-do list, our finances, our other responsibilities, then even the smallest step gives us the strength to take another and another and another.
I love the idea of the teapot in World War II. And I'm hearing this strong message as that control is often asking for help.
That is a true irony, Leanne. That when we realize that our task, you might say in life, is to accomplish the job, whether it's the job of working in a position, the job of parenting, the job of being a friend, the job of taking care of self, that the goal is not to do it solo. The goal is to get it done. And you have just led brilliantly into the next C. If we go to the back of the car and we go to the tire that's on the passenger side, we now take a look at the role of community. And with community, we have an interesting hodgepodge. Like Pauline, we have many communities in our lives. It may be the obvious ones of family, neighborhood, work, faith community, sports community. We may have those subtle ones of perhaps it's a group that you get together with on an ad hoc basis. Perhaps you enjoy gardening and you get together and you just walk someone's garden. Perhaps it's a community around philanthropy. Perhaps it's a community around doing a good act. You may tie that into philanthropy, a one-time thing. But whatever it is, whenever we find a connection with a group of people on an ongoing basis or a sporadic one or even a one-time experience, it builds an extra layer of resilience factor within us because we discover at that point, as John Donne said, no man is an island. Now, we perhaps should update that to our century and say no person is an island, but we'll forgive John for the time frame in which he lived. Truly resilient people have discovered that while they bear responsibility and enjoy that responsibility on their own many times, that's not the total of life. And if we want to get the job of life done, then we discover the different ways we do that in conjunction with other people. In the mention of community, though, I took Pauline and you and me into another aspect. It is that fourth tire, the tire that's on the backside, on the driver's side. And if you think about the back tires in many cars, they're the ones that when you get stuck in the ditch, they help to get you out. The tires of community and connection to something bigger than self are the ones that help us to get out of that rut of being stuck in either in a time of crisis or after a time of crisis, whether it's our own crisis or somebody else's and we're helping them. When we can take ourselves out of the situation temporarily and feel ourselves in context to the world through something bigger, then we realize we are not in something all by ourselves, and the current drama is not the only story in life.
It's so difficult to have the wherewithal, the mind, to be able to say, hold on, you know, this is just happening now. This is not my life. This is not who I'm being. How do you nudge yourself out of crisis mode into this other place?
You work on community before you're in crisis, because often it takes someone else to help invite you out of that situation temporarily. Whether it's to work with them on a project, whether it is to be part of a glorious attending a symphony, if that is what lifts your soul beyond yourself, whether it's going to cheer frantically, rabidly, and noisily at a sports event for your favorite team, and lose yourself in the moment and realize you're part of something that's big and maybe fun and wonderful. For Pauline, this is what happened. She realized that after work, she was already planning to go and be with a group that was going to take a two-hour shift on a Habitat house. Her little girl already had a special play date with a friend. Pauline was free, and after work, with her tire fixed, and yes, her workday completed, she went off with a group of people with whom she doesn't live, she doesn't work, she doesn't even worship. These are a totally different group of people, and their focus was on making sure they could hit nails without hitting their fingers.
Got it. So that's the connection piece. That's the connection. Tire.
Yes.
When I think about this, and I the analogy is so perfect. I mean, it describes comfort and control up front, rear tires, community and connection. You know, a lot of these things bleed into each other, but it's powerful an image for me because it helps us understand the driving source, or the driving force, shall I say, behind us getting to the next step, getting unstuck. How many times, you know, this shock, trauma, even surprises, they can be good. It's not always bad things, right?
I am so glad you mentioned that. We assume that if we purchase that magic lottery ticket,
great choice.
If we suddenly discover the perfect thing to say to our cantankerous next door neighbor, that if we have a magic hair day when we are supposed to go for the company headshot.
Oh, you're hitting low. You are hitting low. Okay.
That poof, we will feel wonderful and everything will line up and we will have all four of these elements of our life just perfectly in order. And it simply doesn't work that way. We can be thrown off as much by an overwhelming positive experience as we can at times by a negative one. Now, I couch that carefully because it depends on how the ripples go out from that experience. But the significance is disruption.
Disruption.
That's where we hit those potholes. And we assume that they're just negative ones. But if you are driving through a school zone and you go over one of those raised areas in the road, It's not a pothole. It's a lift. It's not a drop. But it's going to shake your chassis just the same.
Yeah. All right. So you've done a beautiful job explaining to us this mechanics, literally, of how we navigate these things and how we, a deeper awareness, almost a sense of literacy, emotional literacy, about the process, about what you can expect. I'd like you to help us, knowing this in and of ourselves may get us out of a hole or over a bump, a good bump. But how do we use this to help our friends and family?
How many times have you either heard or said, "Poor Joe, terrible experience. I just don't know what to do or say for Joe." When we pay attention to these four aspects of stability within other people in addition to ourselves, simply by reviewing who they are, what do they like, what are their patterns, what organizations or groups or activities do they find pleasurable and meaningful, then suddenly we may realize, you know what, it would mean a lot for Joe if we would just make sure his grass gets cut. It would mean a lot to Joe to call and say, "Hey, bud, I just happened to have an extra ticket to the game. You happen to be free?" It would mean a lot to Joe to say, "My mother is going to this wonderful new beauty shop, and I heard you and your wife talking about the distress your mother had when her beautician retired. Do you think she might want to go where my mom goes?"
I get it.
We pay attention. And when we pay attention to life. Suddenly, the answers begin to unfold in very practical ways. And let's face it, we can talk theories all we want, but we live life on practical terms day to day.
In your book, you talk about this, you allude to this. Actually, it's not an allusion, it's a black and white sentence that threw me for a loop, which was, yeah, we all know about the golden rule, but there's a platinum rule.
That's correct. The business guru, Dr. Tony Alessandro, wrote the platinum rule.
What's that?
Do unto others as they want to be done unto.
Wow. All right. I can't imagine a better time to actually wrap this first half up and take a sense of moving away from crisis to moving ahead. So when we return with Becky Sansbury here at WCOM LPFM in Carver, North Carolina, we're going to learn more about resilience. Do stay tuned.
WCOM, your all-volunteer community radio station in Carrboro, needs your support. Do you have an idea for a radio show? How about an interest in engineering or a computer background? Are you interested in fundraising or just meeting a group of wonderful people? Please consider a donation of time or money to support this gem of the community. To find out more, please visit our website, wcomfm.org. To make a financial contribution, sponsor your favorite show, or help support our many featured news and information programs, click the PayPal donate button at the top of our main page. Again, please visit our website, wcomfm.org, and thanks for listening to your community radio station. Thank you.
And welcome back to Courage Cocktail Radio Show. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. Glad you could join us today. In case you are just tuning in, I am speaking to Becky Sansbury about her new book, After the Shock, Getting You Back on the Road to Resilience When Crisis Hits You Head On. If you haven't done so already, I sure hope you get out to Amazon and look it up. There are tons of reviews. They're all five-star reviews. The material has been driven home in the early half of our show, where Becky described these mechanics of how to get yourself out of a tight position. Well, the second half of this program, we're going to try to figure out shortcuts, good, simple, efficient shortcuts when we have that angst of searching for the right words or the right way to give help or get help. And have I got a story for you, Becky?
Ooh, good.
It's really simple. And for all those beloved members up in the Northeast, you'll get a kick out of this. I grew up in Canton, Massachusetts. Okay. So when I was a little girl, which I'm going to vaguely suggest in the 60s, all right. You know what, Becky? We didn't have 911. Instead, we had the telephone number of the Canton Police Station in our home telephone book. It wasn't even stuck on the refrigerator. If there were ever an emergency, not only would we have to figure out what the phone number was, but we'd have to make up our mind quickly to call the police or call the fire station. We'd have to do a lot of sorting. And that never really, mercifully, never happened to our family. But looking back and reading this book, I realized there are better ways, safer ways to work. And that's really what I'd like you to talk about, the book, the dynamic that expresses itself in the second part of the book.
Absolutely, Leanne. One of the things, as you touched on your childhood experience, cropped up in my mind was that in the first half of the book, we used the character of Pauline and we took her through a frustrating but not life-threatening situation. Unfortunately, there are times that we find ourselves in life-threatening and life-altering situations. It may be within our own body, our own household, or within the greater context of our personal community. The significant thing for you was that you knew where the phone book was. You knew where the phone number was. It wasn't convenient. It wasn't as simple as 911. But someone had taught you, or you had learned. Had a crisis arisen, you might have been challenged, but you had the training and experience to know where to go to find that number.
God bless my mother. That's all I can say. She really, really did teach Drew, Lisa, and myself what to do.
Let's continue the analogy that we've begun with the car in getting us down the roadway of life. We've established that the four C's of stability, of comfort, control, community, and connection to something bigger than self, sit on that chassis.
That's right.
But most of us don't want to ride a chassis down the road. And if we did, we would feel the onslaught of all the elements coming at us. This is what happens so often when we are in a crisis of any variety. The bigger the crisis, the more the onslaught. And suddenly we find ourselves, as we are moving through and on, trying to solve every problem, trying to take on everything that this crisis has kicked up, just as if you were driving down a dirt road and you kicked up the dirt and the dust all around you. There's nothing to protect you. Unless you do this one thing and you move into what I have set aside as the next part of this process. And that is allowing the experience that you're in or you have just been through to serve like a protective frame around you, just as the frame of the car protects the driver and the passengers. What do I mean by that? What I mean is that instead of taking on everything, you frame yourself right now on what you need to work on within just this experience. Let the others stay on the outside. And within this experience or this car, you have some things to help you. You have a rear view mirror and a back window. That translates into looking at what have you learned before that will help you, that will be a lesson, a prior experience, a prior training that will help to make this experience have lessons and make sense. Perhaps within the framework of this car, you have a passenger. Maybe you have no experience, but you can say to your passenger in your life's car, "Can you help me? I trust you." And maybe that passenger is a person, but the passenger might also be your faith, your philosophy, your education.
A book.
A book.
This very book.
Absolutely. And so it instructs this current experience. When you're ready to take on other experiences, you open the car door and you get out, and other things can come your way. It's safe then.
This is a significant step now, because you've just made the connection between how do we protect ourselves. We isolate that experience, this very moment, we isolate it, cut it from everything else that's going on in your life, so that in some weird way, it detaches it from us, but it also serves as a shell for us.
That is correct. Huh. That is correct. We can take on only so much at a time.
So as we're driving and we identified the experience part, there's something else going on.
I would certainly hope so. Have you ever tried to drive a car that has no steering wheel?
I cannot say I ever have. I hope I never
do. I hope not. I hope not. Within our lives, our vehicles, any of our systems of being, we have to have something that helps us with direction. Now, sometimes it's knowing the direction, and we've come to depend on our GPS and other technological devices, except for old schoolers like me who still like a map, and knowing for sure what the directions are before I hit the road. But we still need a steering device. Within us, our steering device through life are our assumptions, our beliefs. Sometimes we are very clear about what they are. Sometimes they are so much a part of us that unless we or someone who helps us identify them, they're just life. It's just the way we do things. Let me give you an example. As you mentioned, I spent many years in hospice work. For patients and for families, one of the grounding assumptions was my family and my friends will be there to help me when I need it. Now, when that assumption is true, and when it carries through that way, it is a powerful, powerful aid to a person's life. It steers them right in a good, safe, straightforward direction. But let's face it, we talked a few minutes ago about sometimes people simply say, "I don't know what to do or say." They disappear. Sometimes they wear out. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the intentions are wonderful. Perhaps the prayers and the positive thoughts are behind the scene, but they're not right there where you need them in person, whether you need a hand to hold, a little extra cash, or a casserole. Mm. When that assumption doesn't bear out, then we're left both without the help we counted on and with dashed feelings and beliefs and a sense that once again, life has failed us. All of a sudden, your car is going pretty willy-nilly down the road. So as we are looking at our own or helping someone else with their assumptions, one of the things that's important to take a look at is what are two or three main assumptions that are indeed guiding me through life right now? And once we take a look at them, take a look at, is this assumption really true? Is it authentic for me right now? Is it still possible in this situation? I'm going to step away from Pauline to an example that is found in After the Shock. It is from a woman who is local to our area, a very inspiring woman named Rachel Friedman Chapman. Rachel is known in different parts of the country because her story has appeared on many media portals. She's a beautiful young woman who, very tragically, at her bachelorette party, while the whole group of girls was playing around the big pool, was pushed in and hit the bottom the wrong way and instantly became a quadriplegic. Lest we get too deep into the sorrow, understandably, of this life-altering event, and not to downplay it at all, but what I will bring forth are the ways that Rachel and, yes, her husband, because they married a year later, and I will add, now have a beautiful baby girl through a surrogate mother, and the family is complete. But Rachel had one of her many assumptions that really, really had to be worked on. Rachel always had beautiful, thick, long blonde hair. And let's face it, what woman doesn't want to be known for her gorgeous, shoulder-length, beautiful blonde hair? That was her assumption. That's who I am. And when she became a quadriplegic, her assumption was, well, at least that didn't affect my hair. The irony is that for many quadriplegics, due to the change and decrease in blood flow, it causes a thinning of hair. Rachel found herself with one of her standard assumptions about herself severely challenged. But not to be undone, this is where we can take an assumption, maintain that assumption, but we also perhaps have to do some life-altering things to make that assumption hold true. There's this wonderful thing we have now called extensions.
So I've heard.
So Rachel, being the savvy young woman that she is, went to a great beautician, had her hair pumped up with some extensions. She looks gorgeous, and she still has that beautiful, long, blonde hair. There are ways that we take an assumption, and if it is important to the core of our being, then we figure out how to modify our circumstances to fit the assumption.
Some of these assumptions can really trigger a host of reevaluations and, yes, adapting to different ways of getting the same objective. But I sometimes think that when confronted with something that might upend your ambition or upend what you believe is important in the world, sometimes I wonder, you really call into question the cores.
Absolutely. Sometimes our beliefs in our religious traditions, sometimes our basic philosophies of life, our cultural or family traditions get called into serious play. And we wonder, is this something I have simply accepted all my life because of where I live, where I grew up, my family, etc., or is this authentic for me? One of the things I strongly suggest is that a person in the midst of crisis, do not make a final decision on whether you maintain or pitch out of your life something that has been a core belief that gets called into question in that time of crisis. This is the time when perhaps you just sort of neatly pack it up and put it in the trunk for a little while. So you can pull it out later when the fire of crisis has died down. And you can take a look at whatever that assumption or belief is in a calmer time.
I get it. So it's a good time to perhaps, you know, seize the moment, figure out what it is we can do to get out of the situation, but not necessarily throw certain, you know, lifelong beliefs, habits.
Precisely.
Away.
There's a difference between what we do in the heat of the moment and what we do when we bring into our lives what I call safe strangers.
What's that, Becky? What's a safe stranger?
A safe stranger could be pictured by the role that I played for many years as a member of a hospice team. And people are in a dire time of both physical and emotional crisis. And they bring a hospice team into their home or into perhaps a facility where their loved one is staying. And almost instantly, there is a bond of trust. We may have met for only 5 minutes or a few hours. But because of the role that we play, the information that we carry, the assumption that hospice is a safe organization, there for nothing but my well-being or my loved one's well-being, then that bond of safety is immediately opened up and made available. But let's face it, no matter how much we care and how compassionate, we're still strangers to that person, that family. Now, maybe we've met them in the community, but we don't live in that inner circle. We don't live right in the bullseye of that crisis. And so there's a layer of objectivity that comes with that. As we are making our way through these next passages of resilience that we've just discussed, of isolating the experience, of looking at assumptions, a safe stranger is often a valuable one. And we may have multiple safe strangers. They may come through professional help, a financial planner, someone from the medical arena, someone from the psychological, counseling, faith arena, who we instantly have a trust in them as people and in the information and expertise that they offer. But we also don't go home with them and close the door at night.
I understand now. I understand. It's a very finite role. It's a very discrete role in both the mathematical sense of the word, but also in the more poetic sense. These people may not always be in your life. They are there when you need them, and it's up to us to find them, or in some cases they may present themselves.
Sometimes they present themselves. And you were asking earlier about how we can be of help to someone.
Sure.
A safe stranger doesn't have to be someone who wears a particular professional mantle. It can also just be a wise friend, a caring friend, a wonderful listener.
Ah, the listening word.
Absolutely. So often we do have answers within our being. But as we talked earlier about that dust cloud that crisis creates, we can't see through it. When we have someone who might say sits with us,
right,
and lets the dust settle, then sometimes all we need is that other presence, and we begin to hear ourselves talk, or perhaps someone feeds back a few of our words to us. And we find that reassurance and that resilience within ourselves that perhaps we did have experience that we'd forgotten that feeds into this. We do have a powerful assumption, a belief, something in the core of our being that does help us to move forward. And in the heat of crisis, we'd just forgotten it or we had overlooked it.
That's so profound in the clarity of how these things are working. But there's a dimension here in your book you mentioned. It's called resources.
That is the final part of the car. How far would your car get? I don't care what variety it is, if you didn't have fuel in the tank.
Okay, not very far.
Good answer, Leanne. Thank you. Appreciate that. Let's face it, no matter how well we get put together and how motivated we are and how clear our head is becoming, if we don't have the fuel of resources, we don't get too far.
No, no.
But resources are such a fascinating variety of things. They can be financial, which we often think of. They can be food and shelter and that safe place where we reside either physically or emotionally. They can be the resources of people, as we just mentioned, safe strangers or other people who are part of our lives. They can be the resources of perhaps you mentioned your mother. Your mother taught you things. She provided inner resources for your being as a person. Sometimes we're aware of them. Sometimes those other people help us to be aware of them. But all of them come together in that mix that make the fuel that makes our vehicle of life get on down the road. One of the things that happens in a crisis or following a crisis is that we either aren't taking good assessment, understandably, of what resources we have or what we need. But as we move through the crisis and on toward that stronger place, we can do that. What do I have? What do I need? Who can help me get what I need? What perhaps has changed so that my needs are different from what I'd assumed before? Perhaps you had driven a car for years that was powered by diesel fuel. Now you're in a hybrid.
Right, my lovely little Prius.
There you go. If you tried to pump diesel into your Prius, again, it wouldn't make it. So for ourselves, as we help others, and frankly, as we are doing this as part of community, and I guess you hear the bleed where all these parts start coming together, then it's in identifying and making sure that resources for different times and stages are available and used.
Becky, I'm beginning to think about this talk now, which is just spilled over. It's just gone so fast, so quickly. As renaming it, I'm going to call it Driving Lessons with Becky. But
works.
We need to know more. Where? What's next for Becky? What's going on with this book? Who are you talking to? Where can we learn more? Clearly, the Amazon is the best place to find After the Shock, getting you back on the road to resilience when crisis hits you head on, and that's by the Becky Sansbury.
That is correct. I have a website.
You do?
Oh, the name is so complicated for the website. It's BeckySansbury.com.
And that's SANSBURY.com.
That is correct.
Okay.
I am happy to be a member of the National Speakers Association, which will tell you that I am very available to bring this information to your business, to your nonprofit, to your organization of any variety, whether it's in the form of a keynote or a training session.
All right. But I'm wondering, are you going to be on Business Confidential soon?
Absolutely. That's tomorrow. So on the 27th of August, I will be on Business Confidential. Did I get my dates right? I think I did.
Yeah.
And that is a program, no surprise, that's hosted by Hannah Hassel-Kelchner, an attorney focused on business law. And what she does is help business people stay out of trouble and run their businesses better. No surprise, crisis has a huge impact on business owners, business people in business and leaders, and how they work with themselves and the people in their own business, their clients, and the business community around them.
Well, Becky, I hate to say this. Our time is so swiftly moving, but I have a feeling you're going to be much in demand.
That's the plan.
That's the plan. And we're always willing and ready to do shout-outs, particularly for other broadcasters. And I believe that's a Blog Talk radio station.
That is correct.
Business Confidential. So we'll be able to Google that out if our listeners, do you want to hear more of Becky? What time is it tomorrow if it broadcasts?
It will be at 1 o'clock Eastern time.
Okay, great. And Becky, we invite you always back onto the program.
Thank you.
And I'll be especially interested as this unrolls what you've learned from your audience, particularly those questions that emerge. Our phone was ringing, listeners, for all of you who may have been calling in. Regrettably, we can't take phone calls live yet. We may need to do this with Becky, though. We may need to resolve that and offer Becky's help for call-ins.
If people go to your Facebook page, or if they want to send a question to you here at the radio station by email or whatever means that you have,
sure.
I will be glad to provide some resources in response.
And that's just a lovely segue to the Courage Cocktail Facebook page. Many of you are on it. Many of you are what we call passive watchers. We hit thousands of downloads from that and other types of links. But we're also on Twitter. And you yourself are on Twitter and on Facebook?
That is correct. I have a personal Facebook page, which is Becky Sansbury, and a business one, which is After the Shock.
Okay. So I'm trying to provide our listeners, you, in this kitchen table, wherever you're getting this podcast or this live broadcast, a greater sense of, yes, the information is here for you. Use it. This is an extremely wonderful book. I've read it 3 times. I guess you could say I'm a slow reader. But we have to wrap up our show. And I always want to thank you, Becky, for coming on. Look forward to hearing more of your continued success. Well, listeners, as I said, it was the opening show for season 5. We all began in 2011 in a small little White House in Carrboro. We have subsequently moved into our station. I want to thank Bill McClymont. Bill, thanks for being the soundboard engineer today. It means the world to have that all the engineering issues solved. There's also something else I want to thank you. I want to thank the underwriter of the show. We've been very fortunate. We have had the North Carolina State University give us a generous grant for the advancement of women entrepreneurs. And this is a big piece of the action that's happening here, but I'm sure it's happening in your own hometown. And that is, how do we support women in technology, and how do we get small businesses and entrepreneurs the information that they need? So you'll be hearing a lot about these programmings as our season unfolds into 2015 as well as 2016. But it's always a privilege to shout that out. As always, now, Courage Cocktail works like this. You bring the lunch, and I'll bring the Courage Cocktail. Thanks so much for joining me today. I'll be here next week. Have a good week.